To continue a little bit from last week's introduction. So last week's introduction was to work at defining a little bit the terminology of Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lesa Kaman. And we know that there is a concept of Holchanacha Harov. Sometimes it applies and sometimes it doesn't. And we find distinctions in Halacha between a Ruba de Issa Kaman and a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. And we spent some time last week trying to establish the differences, so we're not going to go over all of that, but just very roughly speaking, in one sentence, it seems that the more statistically oriented robes, where we're dealing with numbers, that's, in general, very roughly speaking, the Issa Kaman types of robes, while the more cloistic type, principle type robes, and things are generally like this, robe people do this, something like that, those are the more the Ruba de Lesa Kaman type definitions. And the way Rabbi Asher Weiss put it, we mentioned last week also, that Ruba de Issa Kaman means you have the right to follow the majority, and Ruba de Lesa Kaman means you have a right to assume that there isn't any deviation from the standard. That the standard applies, and you don't have to go looking for trouble. That's his basic distinction. So again, it was a much longer discussion. We went through a lot of nuances in those definitions, but just in case it's necessary for tonight, just to reaffirm that basic distinction. So tonight what I would like to talk about is the topic of Rov and how it relates to various areas of Halacha, particularly Mamonis and Nefashis. And these are two kind of confusing topics, because you'll find indications in the Gemara in a couple of different directions. Between different Gemaras and different Rishonim, you'll find impressions that we follow Rov both in Nefashis and in Mamonis. You'll find indications that we do not follow Rov, not either in Nefashis or in Mamonis. And you'll find a somewhat counterintuitive possibility that we follow Rov for Nefashis, but not for Mamonis. Even though, and as the Gemara explicitly states in one place, you would have thought the opposite. You would have thought that Nefashis is more serious and more consequential and less reversible. And therefore, we would be more likely to follow Rov for Mamonis than for Nefashis, but it's possible that the opposite exists. Again, if you look at different Gemara, different Rishonim, you'll see possibilities in all these three directions. So that's what we're going to discuss tonight a little bit, to try to clarify and try to find our way through this topic. So first of all, as far as Nefashis are concerned, so the Sugi and Yuma and Daf Pei Gimel Amar Aleph, in reference to Pikuach Nefesh, gives us the impression that when it comes to Nefashis, Ein Holchanach Harov. And in that context, what it means is that if we're not sure whether or not a situation merits Chilul Shabbos as far as Pikuach Nefesh is concerned, that a Rov may have indicated that Chilul Shabbos is not justified, it's not a situation of Pikuach Nefesh going after the Rov. Nonetheless, the Gemara tells us that we take into concern the Miut in such circumstances, basically, Ein Holchanacha Rov when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, when it comes to Nefashis. And many Achronim point out that it seems to be that we could have understood otherwise, because in other contexts we do follow Rov when it comes to Nefashis. And there are at least two ways of expressing this point. On the one hand, so last week we discussed at length the Gemara in Chul and Daf Yud Aleph, which is looking for a source for Rov, in particular looking for a source for the Lesa Kaman. And one of the many possibilities, for example, is the fact that we execute somebody, not we, but in theory, the execution for somebody who is Maka Aviv, somebody who strikes his father, is Chayiv Misa, and we presume that it's possible to give that punishment. Now, how is it possible to give that punishment? Maybe the person is not really the son of the man who he hit, right? We never know that for sure. That's only a Rov Bila Sachar HaBal. So apparently, even in a situation of Nefashos, even to execute someone, so we're willing to follow a Rov. And not only that, but for purposes of Sanhedrin, we follow a Rov. Because the Rov that convicted, the Sanhedrin that convicted this person, is, by definition, working by majority. Because we know the Gemara says that if there was a unanimous decision of Sanhedrin, that's actually problematic. Right? Sanhedrin, Shirah, Kul, Lechova, actually isn't good enough. So or every circumstance in which the Sanhedrin is convicting somebody, he was doing it on a majority vote. So apparently we do follow Rov. So what exactly is going on here? So you could ask this question between Gemaras. On one hand, the Gemara in Yuma giving us the impression Ein Hochem Pikuach Nefesh, and on the other hand the Gemara is back Sanhedrin and the Gemara in Chulin giving us the impression you do follow Rov. And you could also ask it in the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, Parak Tezvav Halacha Chavzayin, which should be on the Mar Makoma sheets. So there the Rambam is talking about an Asufi, he's talking about a situation where you have a found child who, if there's any population of non-Jews in that city, so we have to take into consideration the possibility this child may not be Jewish. So, therefore, a marriage involving this child is only a suffix whether or not the kiddushin are really chal, because it could be that this party is not Jewish, and therefore a violation of Eishes Ish, according to the Rambam, in this circumstance, is going to be pater, because even if the city was rove Jews, and the chances are the child was Jewish, nonetheless, we're not going to follow a rove in order to execute someone. So that seems to be against the attitude that we have from the Gemara and Chulin. Right. It seems to be that this is against the Gemaras, as the Ravid points out. Right? The Ravid there on that Rambam is Masik, and the Ravid says Matzanu beGemara beMesachas Sanhedrin Sheholchem b'dinin nefashat achar harov. What's the Rambam talking about that we can't look at the statistical possibility that says this child is likely Jewish and execute based on that? The Gemara says the fairest that we can, that we are holich achar harov when it comes to nefashas. And if you don't like the Gemara, you have another Rambam. The Rambam, not very far away, also in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, in Perek Yimah Halacha Beis. So the Rambam says that one is executed for a violation of Eishes Ish, and again, you can look at this in the Ma'am Makomos, even if the Eishes Ish is a Ketana. So how does the Ketana get married? She's married off by her father. But again, as we established a few sentences ago, right, we never really halachically know that the father of anyone is their father. There's always a possibility that the mother had an affair with somebody else. But we assume it's a powerful rov, rov bilasachar habal. So how can we ever execute someone, the Torah's Eishes Ish, saying that she's an Eishes Ish because her father married her off? Maybe it's not really your father. So from the Gemara itself, we would have said, well, that's no different than everything else in Chulin and that daf. But the Rambam just told us that no, you're not gonna execute based on a rov. So what exactly is going on here? So based on our discussion last week, I think our first instinct would be to say, like the Shari Yosha says in Shai Gimel Parag Aleph, the Shari Yosha is familiar with Shem Mishkap, his Shmeisa-like sefer. So the Shari Yosha says probably what our first push would be to say after last week's discussion. The Pashas the Chiluk here is between Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lassa Kaman. That the roves that we execute based on are situations of Ruba de Lesa Kaman. Now, how exactly the Sanhedrin fits into that, that we'll have to discuss in a few minutes. But let's just contrast now, for example, the situation of Rov Bilsachar Abal versus the Rove of the Jews in the town. So the Rove of Jews in the town is Ruba de Issa Kaman. We're talking about the, probably according to most definitions, talking about the population in that town. And Rov Bilsachar Abal is Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So apparently, the Rambam agrees that you could execute based on Ruba de Lesa Kaman. It's just only Ruba de Issa Kaman, that's where it's not going to be good enough. Even though, again, as we discussed last week, our first impression is that Issa Kaman is actually stronger than Lesa Kaman. But we discussed last week other reasons to maybe look at it the other way around, different from each other, and that for many purposes, Lesa Kaman might be more convincing than Issa Kaman. So that's one way to approach. I should mention, I'm not going to try to go into it right now, but Rabbi Shechter Shlita in the Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, in Siman Lamed Zayin, has a completely different approach to the Rambam, different than most of the Svarim, though he mentions at the end that the Ragashaber has a very similar Hezbek to his, but it's a very complex piece, and I'm not going to do it justice by trying to start, but you take a look if you're interested in Siman Lamed Zayin, the Eretz HaTzvi, you see Rabbi Shechter has a whole different mahalach to interpreting the Rambam's theory in the Rambam's and how the Rambam works with the Gemara in general. But in any case, to go back to the previous point, to be mechalik between Issa Kaman and Lesa Kaman, as appealing as that might be, so that'll only work for the Rambam. Because, so that's okay, because we're doing this in the Rambam's, but it's also what's during Gemara is basically. because how do we deal with Gemara and Yuma and the Gemara and Kulin, for example? So Tosus in Maseches Sanhedrin and Daf Gimel Amud Beis, which is Ayin Mar Mekamos also, and which we'll be coming back to in a few minutes. So Tosus over there says that Tosus explicitly says that for this purpose of Ein Hochem Ben Nefash Sacharov and Hochem Mamon Acharov, we'll talk about that. These are not distinguishing at all between Issa Kaman and Lassa Kaman. That for both types of Rov, these principles are true. So this answer is not going to work for that Tosfos, for the tradition of Tosfos in general. So how else could you maybe interpret it? So there is a very famous comment of the Hafla. Hafla is quoted in many Svarim, Hafla in the Sefer and Ksubis, where he discusses, he has a number of kashas there, in which he discusses various types of mamonis, various situations where we extract a mamonis obligation. And it involves issues of relationships. It involves establishing that someone's a father, or for example, Pidgin HaBen, where one could say that maybe the father is not really the father, or one could say maybe the child is a treifa. If the child, for example, passed away after 30 days, Rachmana Litzlan, so the father is obligated to pay for it, so that's what Afloy asks, maybe the child is a treifa. There's a number of different kashas that all ask from a mamonist perspective, how come we are obligating people to pay money when one could have said it's only a rove in play, and in general, the Gemara seems to say, in Holchum Mamonach HaRov. So that the Hafla establishes that we only say this principle, Ein Holchem B'Mamon Acher HaRov, and we haven't really gotten into that yet, so we're a little bit ahead of ourselves, but the principle that we'll see the Gemara talks about, Ein Holchem B'Mamon Acher HaRov, we only say that, whether we're talking about Rov, we're talking about Nefashos, we only say that if the entire Diyun is for this purpose. That if the only Nafkamina this Shiloh will ever have is this particular moment in situation, so then a rove is not enough to make the call. But if there are other nafkaminas, like for example the question of establishing paternity, we usually have many nafkaminas, right? Many nafkaminas in other areas of halakha. So then, if it's true there, it's true here also. If we accept it as true in general for other purposes in halakha, then we accept it as a vadai here also. The only time we're going to say Ein Holchem Acher HaRov is when the only nafkamina is for this particular case. So it could be, and I have to go through all the details, and we're trying to be brief tonight, so I'm not going to go through it all explicitly, but that may be in some svarim, and so let's say for Chedvus Yotze that I have in the room, discuss that may help to determine some of the differences that come up in some of these cases. But what is still not addressed is the issue of Dayanan, as mentioned earlier. So why is it that we are able to rely on a Rov when it comes to a Sanhedrin, or when it comes to a Bezdin? So that's Pashat Lubad Issa Kaman, and doesn't have Nafkaminas outside of this case. So this is something that Tosfos addresses in the Sefer Bava Kamma, Daf Chav Zayin in the days, the beginning of the third parak of Bava Kamma, where one of the Ein Holchem B'Mamon Acher HaRov sugyas appears. And there, Tosfos picks up on an expression that the Gemara has in the beginning of Sanhedrin. In the beginning of Sanhedrin, so the Gemara there is establishing the fact that we follow a majority vote in the Bezdin context. And the Gemara says, yeah, we know that we do, because we do it when it comes to Din Nefashos. That learns out from Sukkim. And the fashas is more chomer, so for sure we do it for momentous cases as well. So Tosa says, well, then how come we don't learn from there that normal momentous cases will follow Rov also? In Holchem B'Mamon Acher HaRov, we say, why don't we learn a kal v'chomer from here, like we would have thought? So Tosa says, no, you can't really learn anything out of the Sanhedrin issue, because when it comes to Sanhedrin, so the Sanhedrin, the majority, when it comes to any Bezdin, the majority completely knocks out the minority. The minority is as if it doesn't exist. It's a very mysterious idea. Right? Then when you have 2-to-1 vote in a Bezdin, so the one is as if it doesn't exist. And that's contrasted with Mamonis. When it comes to Mamonis, if I come to you with a rove, I say that in 75% of all cases, the truth would be on my side in the circumstance. So, you still have 25%. Right? 25% of the cases will be like you. So that's not meaningless. Right? That's something. That's a miyut. And miyut is, a miyut sounds like it's a negative term, contrasted with a rov, but a miyut is actually a koach. And a miyut is a power. Because if I come and I say 80% of all cases, the situation that I'm putting forward will be true, so you can still come and say, yes, but in 20%, my situation will be true. Which is less than 80, but it's still something. It's still a power. Because the fact is that if I had 100 cases, 20 cases are like me, so that's a plus for me. So a miyut is something. I would lose to a rov, but I have something else. I also have a chazaka if I'm holding on to the money right now. So my chazaka, the fact that I have the money, plus my miyut, beats the rov. So here this Tosfos is doing a couple things. This Tosfos is explaining to us why it is that we don't follow a rov when it comes to mamonos. Although we'll see there are two approaches in Tosfos. And Tosfos is explaining the Sanhedrin mechanism. It's again two important points. The reason we don't follow a rov when it comes to mamonos, says Tosfos in Bava Kamma, is because on the other side you have a chazaka and a miyut, and therefore the rov is not going to be able to beat the chazaka, especially with the miyut. And when it comes to Sanhedrin, so don't tell me you have the miyut, because the miyut is as if it doesn't exist. So what does that mean, it's as if it doesn't exist? So Achronim in general explain what this means. I'll just mention the way it's explained in the Chidushei Reb Chaim HaShas, in the stencils. And Reb Shimon Shkap has discussion about this also. Many Sfarim explain what this means, but just to mention the way Reb Chaim explains it. So Reb Chaim points out that really Rov does two things in general. We have two types of Rov, besides this Gemara. So we only have two functions that are performed by Rov. First of all, you have Rov establishing in a situation of Safek. I have a circumstance where I don't know what's going on. So I'm following a rov to decide what this undetermined element is. That's one type of rov. You have another type of rov also, which doesn't involve suffix at all. For example, we talk about the rov kos, drinking rov kos. Or in Shechita, we talk about shechting rov simanim. So there's no suffix there. You can look at the simon and see exactly how much is cut. There's no undetermined element. You can look at the kos and see that there's some of it left. There's no suffix there. There's a halacha of rubo kikula. That rov, for some purposes, qualifies as all. So when it comes to Sanhedrin, when it comes to a bezin, there's really two things going on. On the one hand, we're trying to figure out the truth of whatever the issue is. So as far as trying to figure out the truth of whatever the issue is, so the truth is more likely to be like the majority. So the two have a pull over the one. Or the 36 have a pull over the 35, whatever it is. But, that's not going to be enough, 36, whatever, you know, whatever it is. So, whatever the numbers end up being. But, 40 over the 31. But, there's also another thing going on. That if that was all that was happening, that wouldn't be enough. And the Gemara has drushes about this, that the whole point is, for mamonos, you need three. If I only have two voting one way, so where do I have my three? So Bal Korchach, you have to say that the way the Bezdin process works is that the two are mevatel the one. And the one is as if he's now part of the three. So basically, it's not only the rov that's machriya, what the truth is, what the din is, but it's also like a rubo kakulo din. That just like rov kos is considered like a whole kos, or rov simanim is considered like a whole simanim, so rov of a Bezdin has a din like a whole Bezdin. So therefore, it's not shaykh to say, well, what about the one guy who voted the other way? Because he halachically doesn't exist. That's how Reb Chaim addresses this. That's how Reb Chaim interprets what this Tosfos is saying. That's what it means. It takes it over and turns it into its status. It makes it into the vote. But what it means is, it's all one process. It's not really two things. But it converts the right. The two who say Zakai, one who says Chayiv. So now the one who says Chayiv turns into a Zakai vote. So the lemaisa, you don't have any chayavot anymore. Right. So you can't say, well, I have a miut. The miut's not there. The miut halacha really doesn't exist. Might be, but it's a little bit tangential. Okay, so that's one approach that you find in Tosfos, right? Besides, so exploring the Sanhedrin point, but just to isolate the part about Mamonis, that's one approach. Now to go to the Mamonis issue that we do find. So in general, the first part of the discussion we're trying to clarify within the Nefashos or within Mamonis, what possible differences could there be? Maybe Ruba this come on, maybe Ruba the West come on, maybe things that have been previously established, things that haven't been previously established. But what about overall differences between the Nefashos and Mamonis? Right, it seems to be, the Gemara does seem to state as a principle, Ein Halacha the Mamon Achta Harov, in Bava Kama, and Bava Basra, and Nefzadi Beis, and other places. And if we're assuming that Nefashos generally do hold like a Rov, so then why is it that Mamonis should be different? So this is one approach, what this Tosfos is saying, is that because maybe when it comes to Mamonis, you're working against the Chezkas Norakama, the fact that somebody else, you're trying to take money away from somebody else, he has a chazaka, and his chazaka cannot be overcome by your rove. That's one approach. Tosfos and Sanhedrin, and Daf Gimel Amud Beis, on that discussion that we mentioned earlier, so there Tosfos seems to have a different approach, and this Tosfos is also, should be also in the Marmakomas, that there, so there Tosfos comments on the passage where it appears in Baba Basra, and Daf Sadi Beis, and Aleph. And there, the Gemara is talking about somebody who buys a behema, and who wants to shecht it. And turns out it's a treif, but the owner, the guy who sold it, says, "Well, I thought you wanted to use it for your field." And does he have the right to assume that? So, what's more likely? What's the rov there? So there, the Gemara says that rov the behemas and not self for shechita purposes. So, nonetheless, it doesn't seem to help because ein halacha b'mam nachar harov. So here, Tosfos says something very important, which basically seems to nullify the concept. There it's Machlokas, by the way, Machlokas Rav Shmuel. But in any case, this principle of Shmuel, so Tosfos says over there in Sanhedrin, that maybe it doesn't really mean that we never follow a rove when it comes to Mamonis. Maybe it just means that the rove in that discussion is not a good rove. It's a lousy rove. It's not a Ruba Ma'alia. So it's not choshed enough for us to rely on. So if that's true, so basically Tosfos is telling us something very major, that it's not really that there's an actual principle difference between Mamonis and Nefashos, really just a matter of degree. It's basically a matter of what normally happens. It's just that when the types of roves that we talk about in Nefashos tend to be much more compelling than the types of roves we're talking about in cases of Mamonis. And Lu Yitzuya, a robe would be very strong, or in the case of Mamonis, maybe we would believe it. And Lu Yitzuya, a robe wouldn't be so compelling in the situation of Nefashos, maybe we wouldn't believe that either. In other words, the impression one gets from the Tosfos is that there isn't really any absolute distinction between the two areas of Halakha. It's really just a function of the types of robes that we tend to be dealing with. Now, why is this robe of robe Shvarim that are being sold not to the Shtark Rove? So that's a good question. It's a tangential point. If you look, there's a Bach that has a controversial statement. Bach is in Choshen Mishpat and Reish Lamed Beis, Chof Aleph. Bach makes suggestion why it's different. It has to do with how many Shvarim the guy buys versus how many people are buying it. And the Kunsh Tzfeikah doesn't like this so much. There's a big discussion about what exactly this Bach is talking about. Reish Lamed Beis. Some suggest, Shmaisa seems to suggest, based on a Ritva in Kiddushin and Afnun Amid Beis, and other Rishonim in other places, that this robe is Shvach, because basically it's totally on what people do, and that's something that could basically change people's tastes and styles and fads. It's not such a solid robe. 10 years from now, that robe could be different. So to use that robe for Mamonis purposes, we're not so convinced about. So basically, what emerges is that you have two approaches in these two Tosfos as to how to reconcile the difference between Nefashos and Mamonis, and the counterintuitive difference, because I would have thought that Nefashos, being so much more chomer, would have had a higher standard, and we find the opposite. So the first approach in the Tosfos in Bava Kama has to do with the fact that Mamonis has a chazaka, as opposed to Nefashos. That's the issue. And the second, the Tosfos in Sanhedrin seems to be saying the issue is just that the Rove, by Mamonis in that example, is a Shtach Rove. One could really suggest that these two Tosfos are really saying the same thing. Really, they're not, or really working in a comparable path, but they're not really giving us two different Hezberim. But maybe the Hezber is basically going along the same lines. But even the first Tosfos is also basically just working the numbers. Now, let's make up a case of Ein Hocham Amenachar Rov. Like, let's say you're a doctor and I'm not, and I have a stethoscope, and you come and you claim the stethoscope's really yours. Right, and you say, look, most stethoscopes that exist in the world are in the possession of doctors. How many stethoscopes are owned by non-doctors? Right, so let's say 75% of the stethoscopes in the world are owned by doctors. So I'll say, great, but I'm holding it. It's in my house. It's in my pocket. Right, so that's chazaka. And to use the secular chashbon, right, possession is 9/10 of the law. Right, so that means I have a 90% rov. Right, there's a 90% chance that the stuff that's in my property, it just also is very sporadic, right? The chances are, I see a shirt, so a shirt that I'm wearing, so the chances are very high that it's my shirt. Right? It could be that I stole it from somebody, it's possible, but the chances are very high that the shirt that's in my possession is my shirt. So it's like a 90% chance that the property somebody's holding is theirs. So you come to me with your 75% robe that most of the stethoscopes belong to doctors, and I'll say, terrific, but I have a 90% robe that I'm holding it. So basically, the chazaka, Cheskes Marikama, is basically just establishing that I have a higher role than you do. And so basically, it could be that these two Hezbeirim are really working along the same path. That, again, if we're dealing with very high numbers, very high percentages, so maybe we would rely on it. If you're dealing with numbers in the 90s or something like that, but if we're dealing with numbers in the 50s and 60s, so we're not willing to do that, especially when there's big stuff on the other side. So since I'm coming with a Cheskes Marikama, that moves my numbers way up, and it moves, it goes up against your numbers, and that's why, perhaps that's why I win. Hi?
Do you really live like that, based on percentages?
To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, the fact that we're talking in terminology like that, you know, to say this is not a good rove, this is a better rove. We're talking basically as far as odds, you know, it's a rove that is inconsistent. Basically,
go in.
I think for purposes of discussion, we can for sure refer to it in terms of numbers.
In theory, with the stethoscope example.
Mm-hmm.
So if the 75% number, if it was 95%, then
maybe,
he would win.
Maybe. I think it's not impossible to say that. Right. I think it's not impossible that might be the case. I don't know, you know, right. For the case, it's not impossible. And this, I think, could be relevant to Akasha, the Quintus Vegas, which I never thought was that powerful when I was in Caribbean Avenue holding it, which is Quintus Vegas. And at the time, I didn't think this was so... I didn't totally see this as a powerful question. I think in this perspective we can relate to it as well. The Kunshlas Fakis asks, why should we say that in Holchem Mamanachah Harov because you're up against the Chazaka? So by the Fashas you're also against the Chazaka because the person who you're trying to execute has a Chazaka on his life. He has a Cheskes Chaim. So Pashas, the way Acharonim address this question, they say, no, it's a different process. That when you're dealing with Mamanus, so the case itself, you're up against the Chazaka, and we deal with the Fasha, so first you establish the facts, and then whatever it is, that affects what happens to him. But just also using the numerical example that we just dealt with, so in the stethoscope case, so the fact that I'm holding on to the stethoscope, or to any property, so that creates a 90% likelihood that it's mine. But, when we deal with the Fasha, so the fact that I'm alive, it doesn't affect at all the likelihood of whether or not I was Mechal Shabbos. And the fact that the person has a Cheskes Chaim says nothing about his likelihood to be, whether or not he's guilty of the crime that you're talking about. It adds 0% to that likelihood. So if you view it that way, so you can understand why this distinction can be made between the Fashas and Mamanus. And this could affect a number of other things also. I saw in this discussion in the Sefer Nesivas Adam, that the Nesivas Adam discusses the fact that the poskim ask, based on Ashitas of Tosfos in Ksubas and Daftes, that we are motzi mamon if there's a sfeik sfeika, and that we are willing to motzi mamon if we have a sfeik sfeika on our side, something we discussed a little bit last week. And the Acharonim asked, but if you say, like as we discussed last week, that sfeik sfeika works based on rov, so then how can you be motzi mamon based on a rov? So unless you want to say that Some Achronim also say that Sveik is such a strong rove already, such a strong point, that basically it has a hachra like a vada. And therefore it would be motzimon based on that. So based on what we're saying, so we could understand a little more, again, it's not an absolute fact that rove is never going to go up against the chazaka. But if you have a very strong rove, and perhaps the Sveik might qualify as a very strong rove, so maybe again that could work even against the chazaka. Right, so again, if we're assuming possession is 9/10 of the law, then the numbers are going to be off. But in theory, if we establish halachically that a sveik is a very strong rove, that it approaches vaday, then maybe in theory that could overcome a chazak. The point is basically not to necessarily address specific numbers, but to say that in theory it could be that we could pack things up enough on this side that it could in theory overwhelm the other side. And this is also relevant to a comment in the Ksos that is discussed in Reb Shlomo Eger Sefer Haikarim. Not the early one. But in the Ksos, in Reish Pei, Sifkat and Beis, that this whole idea that we won't follow Rov against the Mammon, we won't follow Rov against a Chazaka, so that's a Cheskes Marakama. That if the person is holding the property right now, that type of Chazaka. But a Chazaka Meikara, right, a Chazaka that something was once, we don't necessarily know that it is now, but we go on the Chazaka that it was that way. So that, perhaps a rove could be, because that's what the Gemara says, that chazaka ruba v'chazaka, ruba adif. Ruba is actually better than a chazaka. So it means that's talking about a chazaka like a cheskes marakama. So like a chazaka mekar, a chazaka that it was that way beforehand. So again, here's the same point, that it's not that all chazakas are going to fight off a rove, but if a chazaka creates a very strong presumption of the truth being on that side, so then a rove is not going to overwhelm it. But if it's not such a strong point, it's just something that adds a few points in your favor, but not in the absolute way that a Cheskes Marakama does, then it could be that a rove would beat that. And that's also relevant to go back to the point of the Hafla. So the Minchas Elazar in his Tshuvas has a number of comments in various Tshuvas about this Hafla. And there he explains also that the Hafla's point about we follow a rove when it's established in other areas of halacha is being true, that's because the vados that comes to the rove is now halachically strengthened. That if it's only being based on this case, so then we just have a rove on our side. But if it's something that's been established as a vada in other areas of halacha, so now the rove is not just a 60% likelihood, it's basically al pi halacha, viewed like a 100% likelihood. So that's those are consequences of basically assuming that the two Tosfos are really basically saying the same thing. But just for the next few minutes, just want to quickly run through some other hesberim that you find in Achronim as far as discussing the difference. So first of all, Nassim Gestetner and his Sefer and Bav Mitzia has a number of distinctions, I'll just mention very quickly. So one point he mentions is that all other chazakas are basically intellectual chazakas, that you can't really see them. You just know them based on intellect or mathematics or whatever. But a cheskes marakama, the person is holding it, so that's perceptible by looking right now. That takes upon a very strong status. So again, that's maybe why cheskes mammon has such power that it can overcome other things. That's the same thing. Yeah, but the idea is the same. Basically, the idea that we can look right now and see that he has it. Right, but the idea that so assuming that's the prime model of the chazaka that's currently in his state, and then he goes on to say a different hesber, which is along the same lines, basically the same point, that we're talking about present tense. When we're talking about present tense, that's in general a more powerful point than other types of chazakas. He has a couple of other suggestions. He points out that in the fashas, so the rove only has to do one thing. The rove has to establish guilt, and then it's done. When it comes to mominus, the rove would have to do two things. It would have to remove property from the possession of one person, and then establish it as the property of somebody else. So that is too much work for the rove. The rove doesn't have that much energy. So another suggestion he has. And then he also points out that the issue has to do when there are other mitzvahs involved. But basically, when we're talking about mominus, and then we're risking gzela. So gzela goes up against the rove. And when we're dealing with nefashis, so then you might say we're up against resicha. But I guess whatever Bezin establishes is not Sikha, we could say the same thing about Kzeva. It says that passing up on justice is going to be a mitzvah from the other side. But that's far you could probably say both ways. So that's one to be lefalp a little bit of that. There's also a discussion about this in the Chumash Chalkas Yoav, in the Chosh Mishpah and Siman Tesvav, in which he quotes from Pnei Hoshua that a rove can't work against somebody claiming bari. And if somebody gives an absolute taina, so a rove can't work. So that's why it works from the fashas, because the fashas only work with hasra. So if you have hasra already, so the guy can't taina bari against the hasra. But when it comes to mamonis, mamonis don't have hasra, so then it's just my word against his, and his word is a bari. So then a rove is not going to be able to come and overwhelm that. And then he also discusses another svar that maybe rove only works when it's addressed to Bezdin. So there's a difference between the fascist and mamonis, because the fascist, the individual, doesn't have any role. He just has to let himself get executed, and it happens to be a whole discussion in post-him in general, whether or not he has any mitzvah to show up to execution, or he's not allowed to run away. He has no role here. So Bezdin has a din, they follow rove. But as far as mamonis, then he would have to be involved, and he has no obligation to follow rove, except in issues of Isser, and that's the whole Chiddush. That's why the Gemara contrasts Isser to Mammon, because that's where we're both addressing the individual, and that's where by Isser we have a din of Rov and not by Mammon. That's another Svara that's out there. And there's also a lengthy, very lengthy truth about this in the Truth of Dvar Yehoshua, Yehoshua Ehrenberg, where he basically makes the point that Rov only works to establish points of Halacha. So usually in other cases, outside of Mammon, we're establishing Halachic realities. So Rov is good for that, but to establish the Metzius, so then Rov isn't so powerful, and Mammonist cases are more often revolving around Metzius. So that's basically his far. Okay, so let's just quickly chaz what we spoke about. So we discussed, picking up on last week's introduction, so we discussed the question of how does Rov apply to concepts such as the fascist and mamonis? How do we deal with indications that it doesn't work for either, it does work for both, or it works for the fascist and not for mamonis? So on the one hand, the Gemara and Yuma that we don't follow Rov for Pikuach Nefesh. On the other hand, the fact that we do execute people based on Rov, both Ruba Flosa Kaman theories, as well as Sanhedrin majorities. So how do we allow that? So one possibility, and this is also in the Rambam, because the Rambam had the case about the Asufi, in which it says we're not going to execute based on the Rov. But on the other hand, the Rambam also has that case where Eishes Ish, where he does seem willing to execute based on the Rov. So one chiluk that seems indicated is like the Shari Osher of Issachaman of Lassachaman, and we mentioned the Rav Shechter has a different Hezbollah, that chiluk in the Eretz Tzvi. But that doesn't work for Tosfos, because Tosfos is established that it doesn't make a difference as far as they're concerned between Issachaman and Lassachaman. So then we also discussed the Hafla, that we follow Rov in the case where there are other Nafkaminas and it's established as a Vadai in other areas of Halacha, then we'll follow Rov even if it affects the Fascist or it affects Mamonis. And then we discussed what's the story as far as Dayanim is concerned, how did that fit into these theories, and also what about the fact that the difference between Mamonis and the Fascist. The Tosfos dealt with both those questions, Tosfos and Bava Kama, and said that the reason it doesn't work for Mamonis is because you're up against the Chazakah and the Miyut, and the Miyut doesn't help you with the Dayanim because the Miyut is as if it's not there. And Reb Chaim explained that second part by saying there's two dinim of Rov here. There's a Rov that's Machriya the Safek, there's also Rubo Kukulo, and so therefore the Sanhedrin also we apply Rubo Kukulo, which knocks out the minority, so there isn't anything there at all. But on the other hand, so the other Tosfos, the Sanhedrin, basically says the Chiluk is not absolute. It's not that we never follow Rov when it comes to Mamonis. It's that the case in Bava Basra that talks about it is a Shvach Rov. Bach gets involved in explaining why it's a Shvach Rov. And that seems to suggest that it's not really an absolute distinction. It's all based on the types of Rov that we're talking about. And I mentioned the other theories why it's a Shvach Rov. The fact that it's based on Ratzon, similar to Ritzvah and Kedushin and Afnun, that a Rov that's totally on fads or on people's tastes is not really such a solid point. And then we discussed that the two Tosfos may really be saying the same thing, that basically it's just a question of working the odds, and that in general a Rov is not strong enough to overcome a Chazakah, but in theory it could be if you would alter either side enough, and that affects a number of points that we mentioned. The fact that Prince Shasvek is asking, why do we say that Ein Hocham Amanachar Harov because of the Chazakah. We don't say the by Nefashis. We discussed the Nesivus Adam discussion about Sveik Sveika. How can you say Sveik Sveika works again? Mammon, if that's really a type of Rov. And we discussed the Ksos distinguishing between Chazkas Marakam and Chazakah de Meikara, which may not be enough. You're probably right, by the way. I should probably be more clear in distinguishing between a Cheskes Marakama and a Chazaka I'm holding it now. I probably do create two different forms, and that's... Sorry? Right. Well, it also has other connotations. But the Chazaka, the guy having a Cheskes Mammon, is actually a little bit different. And that's the terminology actually that Ksos uses as well, to distinguish between the two. And the Menachas Elazar explaining the Hafla, that the Rove is stronger when it's established in other areas of Halacha. And then we just mentioned a couple of other theories as to the distinction, the Nelson Perio's theories, the question of a visible Rove, a visible Chazaka versus a non-visible Chazaka, a present Chazaka versus a past Chazaka, a Chazaka up against other Yisurim versus a Chazaka that's not up against other Yisurim, and a chazaka that has to, and a rove that has to do one thing versus a rove that has to do two things. And we mentioned the Chalkas Yov's discussion between the King Yeshua about the Bari being the issue, and the fact that the rove only addresses the Bezdin and not the individual. And then we mentioned also with Bar Yeshua, the issue was defining a rove in Metzias versus a rove in Halacha. Okay, so we will stop there.